You are listening to the Reality Steve podcast with your host, Reality Steve. He's got all the latest info and behind-the-scenes juice on Colton's upcoming season of The Bachelor and interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. Now, here's Reality Steve.
Welcome, everybody, to podcast number 107. Host Reality Steve. Thank you all for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Got a great guest for you this week. One of my favorites, Stephen Fishback of Survivor Lore. This guy is a freaking encyclopedia when it comes to this show. We spend a lot of time, probably the first 45 minutes or so, talking about David versus Goliath this season. But then we do some trivia. I ask him the bucket riddle, which I'm still blown away by his answer. You'll hear that as closer to the end of the podcast, but a lot of good David versus Goliath talk and just the guy's insight, being able to recollect past seasons and contestants and what they did and compare it to stuff that's going on this season. I mean, it's fascinating. The guy's a great speaker. Plus, he's really good at trivia and really good at riddles. And he's got a little surprise for you at the end of this podcast that he announces. So stay tuned for that. This podcast is brought to you by Luca and Danny Jewelry. It's the perfect gift for women that you're most grateful for this holiday season. Whether that's special someone or a mother or a daughter, friends, even yourself, from their iconic bangle bracelets and stacks, beautiful rings, necklaces, and earrings, each piece symbolizes what matters to her most and is handcrafted right here in the USA. As I've mentioned a couple times, I sent this to a friend of mine who absolutely loves her bracelets that she got from Luca and Danny. Very well crafted. She said she wears them all the time. She loves them. Go to lucadanny.com and use code Steve to get 15% off and free shipping on your first purchase. That's LucaDanny.com. Luca and Danny, embrace the journey. One thing I want to talk about before we get started with Steven is yesterday's tweet that I sent out in regards to spoilers for Colton's season. So I'm going to talk about spoilers real quick. If you want to tune out for a minute or so, go ahead. So yesterday I tweeted out that, hey, this isn't necessarily last season where Ari and Becca posted on their Instagram story within 20 minutes of each other in the same exact backyard, which was obvious that they were together on a happy couple visit. But yesterday someone had emailed me and sent me a picture of Colton that he posted on Instagram 3 days ago where someone took a picture of him at a fitting with Carrie Fettman, who's the fashion designer for the show. You can actually see Carrie Fettman in the background of the picture. And it looks like he's at a fitting because he still has the tags on his suit or whatever. But there's a woman who has a phone out who's taking the picture, and you can see her hand in the picture. And someone went on Cassie Randolph's Instagram and saw she had the same exact nail bed and nail polish as her. So it could be Cassie in the picture. So after I posted that, people were like, oh yeah. I mean, trust me. Look, the thing is, I didn't need someone to email me pictures of a hand and comparing hands to say that, oh, look, Cassie's the winner. Like, I already know Cassie's the winner. I told you about it a week ago. This is just something for people to chew on that like figuring this stuff out, because I don't follow Cassie on Instagram, so I never would have seen this, and I don't pay attention. I follow Colton on Instagram, but I don't sit there and dissect anything he posts. I don't care about that stuff. All I care about is the information that's told to me. So to me, he picked Cassie because of the information that was told to me, not because of a hand in a picture. But it certainly matches up with the information I gave you. And then after I tweeted that out, someone also brought up to me the fact that they found the same picture that I used of Cassie where you see her nails. She also has a middle finger pinky ring on. And if you look at the picture and you zoom in on the picture of the girl who took of Colton in the mirror, there's a very faint, but you could tell they have a middle finger ring on in that picture as well. And then this morning I heard yet a third thing that I was surprised on. Let me pull it up here real quick. What was it? Oh, there are a pair of shoes underneath the seat in the background of Colton's picture where he's standing there with the suit on. They are like gray boots that have a zipper down the side of them. Well, Someone found a picture on Cassie's Instagram page from April 27th when she was at Stagecoach, and she's holding a pair of boots in her hand, and they look pretty similar to the boots that are sitting right underneath the chair in Colton's picture. So three things that could possibly mean that Cassie was in that picture with him, which would obviously make her the winner because there's no other reason for Cassie to be in a picture with Colton 3 days ago. Anyway, just wanted to point that out. I mentioned, like I said, in the tweet yesterday, it was just the fingernail polish and the nail bed. But since then, someone pointed out a middle finger ring and shoes that she's holding in a picture that's on her Instagram from April 27th when she was at Stagecoach. So if you want to go check that out and compare those, by all means, go at it. I'll probably tweet out the shoe picture later on today. Anyway, let's get to it. Podcast number 107, one of my favorites, Stephen Fishback. Let's welcome in our guest. You first saw him on Survivor Tokenchines, then again on Survivor Cambodia, which was Second Chance. He co-hosts a podcast with Rob Cesternino called The Know-It-Alls. He writes an episode recap every week for People.com. It's great to have him back second time. Stephen Fishback. Stephen, how are you?
Steve, it's great to be here. Thank you very much. I'm doing great.
A lot to talk about with this season. There's a few things that have come up recently that I want to get your opinion on. You might have covered this in when you do your podcast, but I don't listen to many other podcasts, so I'm
the same way. No offense taken.
First off, let's start with the David and Goliath overall theme and this season. It's really been getting rave reviews from a lot of people online, and I really enjoy this season, but I couldn't, if you ask me why I'm enjoying this season more than others, I really can't pinpoint it. I do you know why it's getting the rave reviews as it is online? Do you have a theory on it?
Yeah. No, well, first of all, I totally agree. I think, you know, a lot of people are saying this is one of the best seasons of Survivor ever. I certainly think it's one of the top two all new player seasons in the show's history. The other one being Cagayan, which Tony Vlachos won a couple years ago. And this is competitive for that top spot of best new player season ever. And I think there's two things that are going into that. And the first, of course, is this phenomenal cast you have. You have a lot of interesting, different people with a lot of personality. And what's been really fun is that every one of them is playing the game hard. You know, a lot of seasons we get someone who doesn't really even know what they're doing out there. You know, they may never have seen or heard of Survivor before they showed up on that beach. And so they kind of have stumbled their way forward. This season, I think there's a lot of fans, but it's not just about having fans. It's about having people who are making good, interesting decisions and really playing the game hard. And the other part of that I think is making it so good is that the way the story is being told, the way the Survivor producers are telling the story, they're giving a lot more airspace to a lot of different people. So I think some seasons, you know, even look at last season, it was really just about these two guys. And it was very frustrating to watch, you know, these two guys kind of march to the end in triumph. That was Dominic and Wendell. When you had this other cast of 12 or 14 people who should have been stopping them and weren't. And so I think the way that this season we get a focus on every single player, so we really know why everyone is making the moves that they're making, makes it an incredibly satisfying television. And then I guess I'll say two more things. One is that there's a lot fewer advantages this season than there are and there have been in past seasons. Now, there have been a fair number of idols and idol nullifiers and vote steals. But, you know, last season felt like there was one every episode. And this, it seems like there's been a few crucial ones. And then I think you just have this standout character in Christian Hubicki, who's just people love him. They love to root for him. And I think that is really part of what makes a great season great, is you've got one or two characters on screen who just pop.
Yeah, you know, you say that, and I'm thinking about, you know, Christian obviously is the standout of this season. He's an absolute star so far and the most memorable guy. And I'm thinking about this season, and I'm thinking about the people that are left and even some that have left recently. And now that you bring it up, to me, in my mind, it seemed like there was a lot of Christian Gabby stuff this season. But now when I think about it, Mike's gotten plenty of screen time. Davey's gotten plenty of screen time. Nick's gotten plenty of screen time. So they aren't letting people who usually kind of fade into the background just kind of stay there. It really is more than just, even though Christian seems to be at the forefront of a lot of the interviews and the comedy of this season, there are other contestants that are getting plenty of time. Like, you know, these seven that are left, I feel like maybe outside of Kara, which I don't feel I know a lot about, I know a lot about Mike, Angelina, Allison, Davey, Nick, and Christian. Like, that's what I feel.
Yeah, and even with Kara, you know, we had her relationship with Dan. You know, we had her a couple of times, you know, she was talking about her religion with Elizabeth. So we've had a couple of real moments with Kara too. So even, you know, and that's a character who would frequently just be shunted to the background on a normal Survivor season.
Yeah.
And here she's you know, she's probably the least known of all the players, and yet she's been there. So it's, I was saying to on my podcast last night that, you know, Nick, on any other season, Nick is going to be the biggest character, the standout character. I almost feel bad for Nick that he's got Christian on his season with him, because, you know, any other season, he's the breakout. And yeah, every episode I read this blog about the show, as you mentioned, I award a fishy award for the biggest move of the episode. And until this week, every week it had been a different person I had awarded it to. So I think that really speaks both to how the story is being told and how you have this cast that is really playing an aggressive game.
Who got the fishy this week?
Well, this week I gave it to Christian. Christian played his idol for himself. But, you know, I had people in my comments saying, well, why didn't you give it to Davey? Davey's the guy who told Christian he needed to play the idol. Why didn't you give it to Mike White? Mike White is the guy who had the idea to flip the votes onto Angelina. I'm sorry, onto Gabby.
Yeah.
So, you know, even in a somewhat straightforward move, everyone votes for Christian. Christian plays his idol and saves himself. There's a lot of people whose decisions are going into that.
Yeah, no, there was a lot went into last night. You and I had spoken, you know, full disclosure, we were going to record this podcast on Monday and it was going to air today. And I was going to be like, but it's obviously not going to include Wednesday's episode. And you were like, why don't we wait? Because I think this is going to be interesting, because we had a teaser from the end of last week's episode that teased Gabby was coming after Christian, which had everybody's mouths on the floor because it didn't make people were like, why? It's her number one ally. And then we saw how it played out last night. So it was good that we waited to do this the day after the episode, but there was always something. When I saw that, Christian is too good of a character. And yes, we've had great characters that have gone home around seven or eight before, but there was just something when they showed us Gabby said, I'm coming after him, that I just didn't think Christian was going home last night. I felt like it just didn't make a lot of sense. Plus, I knew he had an idol. It's not like we didn't know he had an idol and he just found it last night going into in the episode. We knew he had one. So if that guy ever thought he was on the chopping block, he's too smart to not play it and just go home with an idol in his pocket.
Yeah, once you've got the hint that they're coming after you, you basically have to play the idol or you're right. It's much better to play it and have been wrong than to not play it and go home with the idol in your pocket. But you know, it is good that we made the decision to wait, because it really would have been disastrous to talk about it. And, you know, we're talking about how great Christian is and he's just been eliminated, you know, the previous day.
Yeah. Or, and you know, the fact that, you know, Gabby was a main character this season, and the we'll get to that in a bit about her decision to go after him. We'll get to that in a bit, but I want to talk about the theme itself. Do you like this David and Goliath theme? I mean, to me, there's so much tribe swapping that happens and people get the friendships with people from other tribes. I'd say by the end of the season, 98% of the audience doesn't remember original tribe alliances. Maybe this season a little bit different, because David versus Goliath is kind of a physical thing. And, you know, you kind of look at Davey, Nick, and Christian and immediately can think, okay, yeah, oh, that's right. They were David's, as opposed to the other four that are on Goliath. Not that Mike is the most imposing figure in the world.
Yeah,
but
I was going to say.
But, I mean, I just, for some reason, I know who the original Davids and original Goliaths on this season are when I look at them on screen, as opposed to a past season, like healers versus hustlers. Like, yeah, by the end of the season, I'm like, who's a healer? What was their job? What was their, you know?
Yeah, totally. Well, I mean.
So do you like the theme here?
The themes are always a little bit silly, you know, and you can tell when, you know, in that first episode when Jeff is trying to explain what's a Goliath and what's a David. You know, I think it was Allison who raised her hand. It was like, I've had to struggle my whole life too. You know, I'm, it's like, if being a David is about struggling, like I've struggled, and Def's like, no, it's not about struggling. It's about your mental attitude as you approach struggle. I mean, it always becomes a little bit like, what are we talking about here? You know, in that first episode, you had people trying to explain what a, you know, and someone was like, David's are about working together. David's are about, you know, it was just like, they were just making things up, but I totally agree with you. You know, compared to a theme like heroes versus healers versus hustlers, where I still have no idea who is who, you know, and what's the difference between a hero and a hustler, and a healer, really. Like, I agree that there's something great about David versus Goliath, where there is just this very visual element to it. And, you know, I also think that, you know, bringing it once again back to Christian, the very fact of Christian sort of makes this season, because he is a David and he looks like a David.
Oh, yeah.
And he's doing these Goliath things. So, you know, I think the fact of him and honestly, the way it's played out, just even apart from him, where the Goliaths took a really big early lead, they were in control of the game throughout the almost the entire game, and then only in the last couple of weeks have these Davids come together, you know, and then worked together to sort of pick off the fractious Goliaths. So I think that the way it's played out has really justified this theme in a way that something like, you know, you were never going to care if a hero or a healer won, you know, and there was nothing that could happen on screen that was going to say like, oh, he's a healer, that's why he's acting in the way he is.
Yeah. I mean, you could, I don't even remember who I told you this before. I watch every season. I watch every episode, but once it's done, because it isn't my job, I just forget things. Like, I couldn't even tell you now who won heroes versus versus hustlers. Who won that seat? Was that the Dom and Wendell season or no? I'm forgetting.
No, that was Ben Driebergen, who was okay. The cowboy from the ex-military.
Okay.
Ben, yeah. He was a hero. So a hero won. So.
All right. So what was the theme of Dom and Wendell season? I already forgot that one.
Right. That was Ghost Island, went and they had the island. That's with right. All the advantages. And actually, like, you know, that seemed like a really fun idea as a theme, where, you know, going back into the show's history and taking all these iconic advantages. But, you know, I think a lot of fans were getting a little exhausted with all of the drama and the narrative of the show being about like who had which superpower, you know, like, oh, I've got this thing in my pocket that does this. And if you weren't invested in the characters and the people who had those advantages, you didn't really care who was playing their extra vote when.
Exactly.
And I think that's what's so great about this season, is like, we care about the characters, but there's been a lot more attention and focus on the characters, so that when they do have an advantage, it's so much more meaningful.
I think it's safe to say that Christian is playing the best game right now. He's played the best game all season. I think you would agree, right?
I don't know. I mean, he's in a bad spot right now.
Well, yeah, he's in a bad spot, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think he's played the best game, maybe the most surprising game to this point. I don't think anybody has played, when I ask, like, well, who's playing the worst right now? I don't think with these seven left, you could say somebody's playing a bad game. They're all trying hard, and they all have cases to be made at the final tribal if they get there. Is there anyone that you see that's playing a game that's maybe gone unnoticed, that's playing a better game than maybe the average fan watching realizes?
I actually think Kara is that person. You know, I think we've seen her at crucial moments being very strategic in ways that not a lot of people are noticing, where, you know, basically, you know, right out of the gate, she was kind of forced into this showmance with Dan. You know, Dan had a crush on her. And even in those very early days, as she did play it up and flirt with him, and you know, because of course, like, someone comes to you and is like, I'm your ally, we're in this together, you know, I love you. Like, what are you going to say? You're on Survivor. You're like, ah, yes, I love you too. You know, I mean, but even out of the gate, people were saying, you know, Dan's got a showmance, Kara has a strategy. And I think we've seen her at crucial points be very strategic with the decision she was making. You know, this is going to be a little bit of a deep cut, but right out during the swap, she was, one of her allies, Natalia, was blindsided. And you know, immediately after Natalia went home, Kara went to work. You know, she was strategically kind of operating with everyone on her tribe. And then, you know, a couple of weeks ago, she cut Dan because she felt like Dan was hampering her game.
Yeah.
So I actually think, you know, Kara's probably, of the players left, the one we've seen the least from. But I think, you know, if she gets to the end, she's got a few crucial key moves that she can point to and say, I was I was a big part of this.
Yeah, and it's one of these things where, okay, I don't know spoilers at all for this season. Maybe they're out there, maybe they aren't. I don't even know if they're out there.
I don't know. Yeah. I try to avoid them.
Yeah. Like, the one thing that, you know, we've had this discussion last time we talked about was on the Dom Wendell season, and I was convinced Dom won based on the edit that he was getting. So it shows I really know nothing about how editing works on this show, or I just picked the wrong person. And
no, a lot of people who analyzed the edits thought Dom was winning for that reason, too. He was getting such this big, huge edit.
Yeah, and they went with his, you know, partner in crime, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, until last night, it was Christian and Gabby seemed to be getting the most meaningful screen time. But like I said, Nick has had plenty of airtime. Davey has had plenty of airtime. Mike has had plenty of airtime. But it seemed like it was Christian and Gabby because they were, you know, together. He's in a bad spot right now, as we know. Last night's episode, there were 8, and it was basically, what is it, 4 votes for him. No, it was 5 votes for him, 2 votes for... Two Gabby and 1 Allison. He voted for Allison, and then Mike and Angelina voted for Gabby, which sent her home because Christian used his idol. So it just seems like, okay, well, if we're going off last night's tribal council, well, then next tribal council should play out just like this one. But going into the episode, we don't know if Christian finds an idol next episode, because if he doesn't, you would think, well, if we tried to just get him out and he used an idol on us, well, now we got to get him out because he doesn't have an idol. I mean,
well, I think to me, that's the sensible thing. Okay. Yeah. We tried, he avoided us. Now let's really get him. But it's funny when you're out there, like sometimes it's the opposite happens. You know, you try for someone, they play an idol. It's a big move. And for some reason, a lot of players think at that point, well, you know, let's give them a break. They dodged the bullet. They played the idol. And there's something like to the momentum of the game shifting where once someone plays an idol, once someone, you know, someone dodges that vote, people are almost more excited to play with them. It's like they have like momentum. They've got like the sparkle, you know, like they're like the hot new commodity. Like they're the ones who just made the big move. They're the ones who are at the center of the action. I remember when we were in Cambodia and you know, Kelly Wentworth had really been on the outside of a lot of the strategic conversations. She played her idol, sent Andrew Savage home. And, you know, I was like, okay, let's go again. You know, we tried once, let's get her again. Like now the fact that she's played her idol, there's even more of a reason to vote her out because now she's a bigger, you know, now she's an even bigger target if she gets to the end. Now she's got, you know, an even better story if she makes it to the end. But a lot of people at the time thought, no, you know, let's give her a break. We got to, you know, she dodged the bullet. Now it's someone else's turn in the crosshairs. So I certainly see the argument for running the same scenario and going after the same person. But somehow the momentum of the game can shift very quickly.
Except as we saw last night, everyone out there that's left on the island has admitted on camera he's winning this game if he gets to the finals. Yeah. Like, we can't beat him. So you would think, yeah. But then when we see the previews for next week's episode, everyone's throwing all other names out except Christian's. We hear someone saying, Nick's got to go. And someone said, I think Mike's got to go. And then it was Davey's got to go. It was all over the map. So we can't put too much into the teases for the following episode.
Right.
I'm not just going to give it away. But it is interesting. You would think after watching last night's episode, they would just go back to the well and be like, okay. Well, he just used it, so he doesn't have one. But we know when you use an idol, another one gets put back in play. Maybe Christian finds it next episode, and I would think if I'm him, I got to spend most of next episode looking for it because they're gunning for you.
And we've only seen really 3 people, you know, really go out in search of the idols, Nick, Davey, and Christian. So he certainly has a good opportunity to find another idol for him. Although, as you said, you were pretty sure Christian wasn't going home this week because he was featured in the promo as maybe going home last week.
Yeah.
So maybe he's in trouble. Maybe the fact that his name wasn't thrown out for next week means he's really in trouble next week.
It's very possible. I think, though, it's just something tells me this guy's winning because that would make, I think, the perfect season because of that theme of David and Goliath. And to have this kid who literally personifies everything that you would think of when you just look at a David. Fair or not, this is your David. And if this guy wins, I think so many people would be happy. And I think they like to appease their fans. Not like they're fixing the game, but it would just fit the storyline of this season perfectly if Christian ended up winning. I want to see him win, to be honest.
It's the opposite. It's not that they're fixing the game. It's that they're telling the story knowing who won. So they want to tell a satisfying story. And I agree that, like, I don't see – if Christian goes out, I don't see people being satisfied with any other winner this season.
Exactly.
That's almost why I thought, like, if he was going to go out, he had to go out earlier because it would give people time to recover, yeah. You know? Like, if Christian goes out at 4, people are going to riot. You know, no one's going to – or, I mean, you know, Survivor fans rioting. You know, who, yeah. you don't want that.
Okay, so there's one thing that I want to talk about with Kara, and I don't know what has happened with this, but back before this cast was even announced.
Yes.
So I think it was back in, June or so, maybe July, sometime this summer, definitely before the cast was announced, Alec and Kara had posted a picture together online, and... Do you know what became of that? Are they a couple post show? Are they in trouble for doing that? What do you know from what you've heard?
Yeah, this was in May, and so Alec posted a picture online. It was of him and Kara, and like looking straight into the camera, and it with the caption was "F it" with you know the full word of F spelled out. I don't know what the swearing policy is.
Oh yeah, you can do it on the podcast.
All right, it was a fuck it.
Yeah,
and the picture got picked up by TMZ, and as a result, the rumor is, and I have heard that Alec is now banned from the reunion show, but Kara will still be going to the reunion show. Whether you know maybe whether that choice was because Kara does a lot better than Alec did. Obviously, or because it was Alec who posted the picture. You know, the crazy thing is that if Alec had posted the exact same picture and just not captioned it, fuck it, it probably wouldn't have been an issue. You know, Survivor contestants post pictures of themselves with other Survivor contestants all the time.
Yeah.
I really think it was just that middle finger extended to production that ended up pissing them off, or maybe not even pissing them off necessarily, just forcing their hand, you know, making them take action. And the fact that it got picked up by TMZ. So yes, I've heard that Alec and Kara are a couple, or they were a couple. I mean, I don't know what their, you know, what their status is as of today, but, you know, I'd heard that as of a couple of weeks ago that they were dating. But yeah, how that picture got picked up by TMZ, you know, why TMZ chose that one to go for, I have no idea.
Yeah, because at the time, who knew that Alec, I mean, I guess it might have been out there by, I know, there's the Martin, what's his name, Martin Holmes, Gordon Holmes, Martin Holmes, what's his name?
We have one of each.
Oh, that's right. There's one of each. The Inside Survivor guy, which is Martin.
Martin, okay. Yeah.
Now, when he spoils, like, I don't mind getting spoiled on themes and cast.
Right.
I don't care about that. That's fine for me. Maybe it was already out there. Did that picture come out after Martin had spoiled that Alec and Kara were going to be on the upcoming season?
I'm actually not sure. I don't remember the timeline for that. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's interesting. But, yeah, like you said, if he would have just put a heart in the caption or something like,
yeah,
you know,
like, this is my new girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, no one's going to be, like, upset about him posting a picture of himself with his girlfriend.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, well, I guess we'll see. Because Alec, like, if Alec wasn't part of the jury, I don't think it would be a big deal if he wasn't at the reunion show. But he is part of the jury. And if he doesn't get to be there for the reunion show, I mean, it might be interesting. It's not a huge loss.
I think it'd be a big thing
if a winner or of the second place finisher did something to get them in trouble and wasn't invited to the reunion show. But, you know, Alec finished, what, 10th, roughly?
Yeah, the challenge had that when, what's her name, wasn't invited to the reunion to receive her winning prize.
Oh, yeah.
Camilla.
Camilla.
Yeah. I figured, you know, I think you'd have to do something pretty extreme to have won a show and not be allowed on stage to accept your prize.
And Camilla did that by punching up a cameraman or producer.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty transparent line cross.
Yeah.
But Alec, you know, Alec was a much bigger character than I think a lot of people were expecting. And I think partially because of that stupid picture, I think, A, people were sort of expecting Alec to kind of be a doofus, which he wasn't. He was great. He was a great character. And B, I think people thought, well, oh, he's going to get a bad edit now. You know, they're going to show him. But I guess, you know, with reason, production has a lot bigger concerns on their on their mind, you know, in terms of producing this massive CBS show other than just like getting even with one random contestant. So Alec actually got a great edit and he was a great character and I think he will be missed. I mean, the bigger loss, of course, is for himself because people get money for being on the reunion show.
Yeah. No, it's going to be interesting if he definitely, if the rumors are true that he's not allowed at the reunion show. But
yeah.
So we're recording this right now, as we know, last night's episode aired. We're down to 7, 4 Goliaths and 3 Davids. The original Goliaths are Mike, Kara, Angelina, and Allison. And the Davids are Nick, Davey, and Christian. It's really impossible to predict how things are going to play out, even when you're down to 7, because you have no idea what twists are possibly coming or who's going to win immunity, what the immunity challenge is. Like, if I laid out for you the next 5 immunity challenges, you might be able to make a better guess, but still, it would still be a guess. You don't know who's going to find an idol.
Right.
And not to mention people flip-flopping to advance their game. You just have no idea. But to the best of your ability, who do you think is winning this season?
I mean, I really do think it's Christian.
Yeah.
I really, you know, he's been this giant character on the show, which, as we've said, you know, typically someone is edited, the winner is edited to be a pretty big character. If he makes it to the end, everyone has been really transparent that they think he deserves to win.
Yeah.
You know, we had the jury last night basically cheering him on when he played his idol. I don't think, you know, even, you know, Gabby's now on the jury. I think Gabby's obviously going to be a big Christian advocate. The best case scenario for you, by the way, is if your allies go out and you don't have anything to do with it, because to get to the end with all of your allies on the jury, that's the dream. And
yeah.
But not having to betray them yourself is even better. So I think that Christian's in certainly the top spot if he can make it. Now, that said, Christian also has, as we've just discussed, the hardest challenge in terms of getting there, where everyone recognizes that he's the biggest threat to win. How does that guy make it to the end? Well, maybe it is winning the right challenge or playing the right idol. We've certainly seen it a couple of times, even in the last few seasons. Ben Driebergen, who we were just talking about, Mike Holloway in season 30, Wendell last season, people who were universally recognized as giant threats, nevertheless making it to the end through a bunch of crucial immunity wins and idol plays. If it isn't Christian, I think it's my two favorites, to be honest, are Nick, who has been a longstanding favorite of mine. I really love the way he plays. I love his enthusiasm. I love his game plan. And Davey, another great one. I'm going to list everybody here. And I actually think Kara has a shot. I know that sounds crazy, but you've got this jury that's largely all Goliaths. And everyone in their exit press talks about how charming and wonderful and incredible Kara is. And so I can see a case where if Kara makes it to the end and you've got this jury of Goliaths and she's the last Goliath standing, she could have a case that, like, hey, I didn't make any of you, I didn't piss any of you off. Now, I do think you know, if she's there with Christian or Davey or Nick, like, how would a bitter jury award Kara, a bitter jury awarding Kara over Nick would be pretty disappointing, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think everybody that you name, like I said, you can make a case for 7. I'd say the two on the, if we're ranking 1 through 7 right now, I'd say the two on the bottom would probably be Angelina and Allison in terms of a case they could make for winning, because I don't see much that they've done. I think Mike can make a case. Mike has been in the middle of some moves, but you know, you read Dalton's Ross's recap on EW.com this morning. He even said, like, right now, they don't have the numbers, but I think the three strongest players left, or the three favorites to win this thing, are the three Davids, Nick, Davey, and Christian, which I agree with. I really do think if you were to rank 1 through 7 right now, I'd go Christian 1, Nick and Davey flip-flop at 2 or 3, and then go rank your Goliaths however you want to rank them. I'd say Mike and Kara would be the first 2 out of those 4. But like you said, you just don't know. There's so many things that we don't know about coming up, so it's hard to predict. But yeah, I think Christian, if he gets there, I don't see any way he doesn't win, and doesn't win by a landslide either. I don't even think it's going to be close. Or I don't think we're going to close vote at all.
I mean, right, you could see someone else, you know, picking up, like, maybe Kara gets Dan's vote or something, and then, you know, or there one or two other votes, you know, come in. Although Dan and Christian were both brochachos together. The funny thing, I think, is this season, the whole storyline of this season has been this David comeback. You know, the Goliaths have been dominant. Finally, the Davids, last episode, for the first time, get the majority. And what happens? two Davids immediately go home. Now the Goliaths have the numbers again. I honestly, like, some, like, part of me just kind of roots for the Goliaths to win, to get to the, to just vote off the Davids one by one. I mean, it would be such an unsatisfying end of this season when we have these incredibly rootable David characters.
Yeah.
But it just would be so funny to see these four Goliaths be like, you know what? Screw it. We're like, standing tough. We're going to vote out these three Davids, and then the final four to be all Goliaths. I mean, it would be so unsatisfying as to almost be hilarious. But I actually think that Angelina would have a case. I mean, I know that she's certainly gotten a lot of, you know, eye rolls from the other contestants, but she's someone who has been a target a lot of times. She's dodged the vote a lot of times, and she's a great speaker that we've seen. So I wouldn't rule her out yet. The person I actually would rule out the most is Mike White, simply because he's a known celebrity, because people, you know, obviously we have no idea what his financial situation is, but it's probably better than a lot of the other people out there. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that there is an element with Survivor juries, as much as we would all love them to award, you know, purely award the best gameplay, I do think needs and circumstances comes into it.
There's two things I want to talk about that came up in recent episodes that I want to get your thoughts on. And 2 weeks ago, we had Dan getting eliminated by the Idol Nullifier. I can't remember who said it in an interview. I think it might have been Probst with Dalton, or maybe Dalton said it to Probst in his weekly interview with him, that Survivor is a game of strategy and not chance, and that the yeah. Idol and that the Idol Nullifier somehow is something the cast should have been told about, was at least a possibility, like was in play this season. Do you agree with that or no?
My feelings about Survivor have evolved a little bit, where I used to feel like it should be a pure game. And if it is a pure game, then everyone should know what the opportunities are. You know, everyone should know what's out there, whether or not, you know, maybe it's just somewhere in the contract, it should maybe be listed, you know, so that if you're going to be lazy and you're not going to read every word of the contract, that's on you. But the opportunity is there to find out the type of things that are going to be played. Now, I've come around more to the idea that there is a tremendous – I mean, there's no question there's a tremendous amount of luck involved in Survivor.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's, you know, probably about a third luck, if not more. And that, you know, that extends all the way back to who you're cast with. If you're on a tribe of people and you find people who are similar to you and who you naturally get along with, you know, that's just a lot of good luck, and that's crucial to doing well in this game. I mean, you look at Christian and Gabby. They got really lucky that they were cast on a tribe together. They got swapped together. You know, those two, that's just luck right there, right? If you get unlucky and you're on a tribe of people who you don't have anything in common with, then you're going to get voted out early, and that has nothing to do with you. A lot of that has to do just with the bad circumstances that you were cast in. And so I've come around a little bit to the idea that some of these advantages enter the game. There's a tremendous element of luck. You can't play around them. And it makes it a little bit more exciting for the viewers. So now that I'm no longer considering Survivor from a player's perspective, and I'm really just thinking of it as someone who watches the show, who writes about the show, who podcasts about the show, you know, certainly a lot more fun to talk about the show afterwards when some big crazy thing happens. And that's not a question of fairness. That's just a question of big wild things and luck. So it is somewhat disappointing as like in terms of the pure strategy of a perfect game, but I've embraced it.
You know, again, I don't know where I stand, because by not telling the cast members the Idol Nullifier is a thing, you obviously cannot plan for it. And we saw what happened, but it made for great TV. So the question becomes, is that fair? And of course my answer is, I don't know. Like, I mean, I and this idea of strategy versus chance, I just don't think it's so black and white. Survivor is a game of strategy, not chance. It's not black and white like that. There's definitely a gray area there, because both are mixed in. Like you said, you think it's about 33%, maybe not, maybe a little bit more. I think it's kind of 50-50. Like,
yeah.
There's just too many things that you are not in control of out there that could eliminate you in your game. Tribe swaps, idol findings, idol nullifiers now, which apparently, you know, are a thing. I don't know if it's going to be a thing going forward or not, but not, you know, it's not like I was, you know, crying over spilled milk for Dan, but Dan was in a position where he did everything right. There's nothing else he could have done differently at that particular tribal, yet he went home because of something that was put in play that he had no idea and nobody had any idea about. Like, that's where it's like, well, is that fair? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Survivor's not, I mean, I think you're right. You know, the tribe swap is another perfect example of you can play the perfect game, you know, get a tribe swap, you get really unlucky, you're alone on a tribe of people who are from the other group, and that's it. That's your game. And yeah. you did everything right. You just got really unlucky. You know, we certainly saw the first tribe swap was in Survivor Africa, and you know, you had this guy Silas who just got just really, really unlucky. And there's nothing, and that's we've seen that dozens of times. Yeah. So subsequently over the season.
But we know tribe swaps are coming every season. That was my deal with the Idol Nullifier. It's what, 37 seasons in now. It's the first time we ever had one. So it's like, how is Dan supposed to prepare for that? He can't, because he doesn't know what's out there. He doesn't know what's a thing. So yeah, it's just but it makes it a great talking point, because I don't think that everybody's on one side on this. I have no problem with that, and I don't think everybody's on the other side of that's bullshit. Like, I think it's just a great talking point. But in terms of the strategy of the season and how the game went for Dan, there are definitely people probably on both sides that no, I don't think that's fair, and some people that's like, hey, it's what you signed up for. You never know what they can throw at you. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's I'm on both sides of that. You know,
yeah,
I don't think it's fair, and that is what you signed up for.
Yeah.
And I, you know, the thing that I really regret is that, you know, Dan had two idols, and Jeff has now weighed in on this. Apparently, he could have, if he had still had those two idols when he went home, he could have played the second idol and been safe. So I think that would have been really cool. He had just played his second idol, the previous tribal council for Angelina. But if he had had the two idols, the one got nullified. If he played the second one, I think that would have been so cool.
Yeah, his second idol would have nullified the nullifier.
Exactly.
And he would have stayed. And
yeah.
Wait, so who would have ended up going home on that?
That would have been Christian.
Would have been Christian, yeah.
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 I mean, it's funny. Christian has dodged a lot of bullets this season.
Yeah. No, I it's just he's low on the numbers. There's four Goliaths and three Davids left. They all just gunned for him this episode. It's like there's no way he should get to the end and win this thing, but the way they've told the story all season, because when they edit the show, they know who won from the very beginning. So, like you said, they have to tell a story throughout the course of the season. He's just gotten so much screen time, and they've given him comedy bits that they usually haven't done in the past before with, you know, him talking about theories and, you know, talking during the 6-hour challenge and telling stories and asking Jeff questions about past history, even though they didn't show that part. It just seems like he's going to win, or at least get to the end and be there and have a chance to win. So the other thing that I want to talk about has to deal with Christian, and it's something he said last week, and I found it pretty fascinating. On the double episode, he said that, and maybe someone else has said this in a past season, I don't remember, or maybe it's just common knowledge, but when he said it, I literally wrote it down because I knew I wanted to ask you about it, and it definitely triggered something in me where I don't think it's been said before. But he said, I have to keep threats around or I'm the only threat remaining. And he said this when he was thinking of keeping Alec around, and then he voted him out. So
yep.
That idea of I have to keep threats around or I'm the only threat remaining, I never thought about that before. And has anybody ever verbally expressed that?
Well, Jeremy, Jeremy in Cambodia, he had this idea of having meat shields, so that he really wanted to keep a lot of these big athletic guys around him. And he tells me that I was his like strategic meat shield, like keep yourself surrounded by people who are going to be perceived as threats. And then they will be the ones who are the targets. It's a good idea. It is a really good idea. And you had Davey saying it this episode, you know, if Christian goes home, then I'm the next in line. And actually, Tony, who wants Cagayan, he has also said, and I don't know if this made the show, that the reason he kept Spencer Bledsoe, for those of you who remember back to season 28, which is now, you know, 10 seasons ago, the reason he kept Spencer Bledsoe around was because he wanted to have this giant threat. Everyone knew that if Spencer made it to the end, that Spencer was going to win. So Spencer would always be the one to be the big target. Now, I actually had a similar idea in Survivor Token Chains when I thought, I've got to keep JT around because JT is going to he'll be the biggest threat, and people will vote for him instead of me. Of course, that doesn't work out when the guy wins immunity and makes it all the way to the end. So, you know, there's a downside to keeping those threats around, right? Which is you keep them around, but the reason they're threats is because they have this good shot to win. So if they do manage to make their way to the end, then you get screwed for not having taken the shot that you could have.
So Christian says that, and he's, you know, debating whether or not to keep this threat around. He obviously ended up not keeping Alec around and made sure he was gone. So pertaining to Christian's game, do you think it was the right move for him to get rid of Alec at that time?
It's tough because I do. I mean, Christian says, I've got to keep the threats around. He votes out a threat and then suddenly he's the target, right? I mean,
yeah.
So you see there's pretty clearly, you know, by voting out this threat, he is making it, you know, he has definitely made himself a bigger target. I mean, Alec is a little bit of an interesting case because Alec is, you know, compared to the other contestants left, Alec was just this dominant physical force. You know, maybe when you had Dan out there and you had John out there, Alec was, you know, even in that competitive field, Alec was still maybe the most athletic guy. Then when those guys are eliminated, suddenly Alec, you know, is really looks great compared to the rest of the field. Of course, you know, you've got endurance challenges or puzzles, you know, he's not necessarily the best at those, but so the danger of keeping Alec around is that he keeps winning immunity. So you've got a threat in the game. He's winning immunity and you get voted out anyway.
Yeah. It's, I don't really know. Like he said, it's like, if Christian ends up winning, it doesn't matter. Like that. Yes, it was a good move, but it's almost hard to answer the question now,
right?
Because we don't know how everything plays out.
That's it. You can only decide in retrospect if it was the right move. You know, for the winner, everything is the right move. And for everybody else, they screwed up.
Yeah. So last night in particular, Gabby gets eliminated. And, you know, the big theme of the episode was she went after her number one ally in Christian. She made a big move. She felt like I really understood her story. I understood why she did it.
Yeah.
My question is, did she do it too early?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, it's so tough. It is so tough because, you know, so many situations, so many seasons, we've seen people waiting for their opportunity and then it never shows up. You know, we had Laurel last season. Everyone was losing their minds because every week Laurel would say, it's not the right time yet. It's not the right time yet. And then by the time it was the right time, it was too late. You know, Dom and Wendell had idols. They won immunities. So, you know, she missed the only shots she had. And it's complicated because now with this fire making challenge at the final four, that means you have, you know, one fewer votes to actually eliminate that big threat. You have to take them out by the final five. And she knows that Christian has an idol. So it's the final eight, right? Last night was the final eight.
Yeah.
Every episode that we get closer to that final five, it's going to be likelier that Christian will play his idol, right? Like, you know, now at eight, maybe there's a chance he won't play it. But if we're at six and he only has one more tribal council to go through, and, you know, if he even senses a whisper of suspicion, of course he's going to play that idol. So, I mean, you know, there's so much that can go wrong in terms of someone winning immunities and so in terms of someone finding advantages. I think she had the shot. Maybe it was one tribal council too soon, but you know, that's, I feel like that's splitting hairs, but it sounds like you think it was too soon.
I do. And I only think so because of their bond, on the show that we clearly saw all season. It was brought up in Dalton's, recap today as well, was, is it more important to have the respect if you get to the end or the ally to help you get there? And I felt for somebody that was as close to him and tied to him as they were, I think turning on him that quickly, if I were her, I wouldn't have done it that quickly. But she recognized the situation. If I get to the finals with this guy, I'm not winning. So she wants to win the game. So I applaud her for that. I guess I just think she should have done it a little bit later, but I see the side of, well, if we do it at eight, he wouldn't think I'd turn on him this early. Like,
right.
So I get it. I do get it. If it were me, I would have waited. I would have waited one or two more tribals because I felt that she was really close to him. And I'm curious. I mean, I'm sure they're fine. I'm sure he's gotten over it and she's gotten over it and they're probably friends outside the show. I'm sure he's not harboring any ill will for something that happened last May, especially if he won. You know, it's tough because you have the people that are like, but you guys are friends. How do you turn on somebody out there? But frankly, you kind of have to at some point. If you want to win the game, you're going to have to lie and manipulate and not cheat, but
that, yeah. And you know, it's probably, probably much easier for him to forgive since she was the one who went home.
Yeah.
You know, he was fine. Probably, you know, looks great for him. The other thing too, is that, you know, once it gets closer to the final five or the final six, everyone is going to want Christian out. So no one's going to say, oh, Gabby, like, you deserve credit for this big move because you voted out Christian. Probably everyone is going to say, hey, that was my move. You know, Allison is going to raise her hand and say, I wanted to vote out Christian. Mike's going to raise his hand and say, I wanted to vote out Christian. So I do think there's an element when you're, and, you know, building your survivor resume is such a terrible, terrible expression, but, you know, maybe telling your survivor story, you know, you want to get to the end and say, I have a story to tell. And I think for Gabby, I think it's really important that people perceive her as being the one who voted out Christian, rather than at the final six or the final five, when everyone unanimously votes out Christian, you know, no one's going to give her credit for that.
Yeah, no, I'm on the fence of, I do think she could have waited one or two,
yeah.
but I see why she did it at eight, because like you said, yeah. As you got closer to five, all the more reason for him to play it, as he was running out of time to play his idol. So if you're going to blindside the guy, yeah. And you know what? We don't know for sure, because there's obviously plenty of footage that was filmed that didn't air that we don't get to see, because we only get 42 minutes a week, but of basically 3 days worth of filming.
Yeah.
But if Davey doesn't go and tell Christian that, is he blindsided? I don't know. Maybe somebody else would have said something, or he would have had some intuition from something else. We don't know. But Davey telling him, hey, they're after you.
And that's the question that a lot of people, I mean, that I think is also a good one, is did Gabby tell too many people? She didn't have to tell Nick. She didn't have to tell Davey. I mean, you know, could she have just pulled off the same move just with
the Goliath.
Mike and, yeah, just with the Goliath and not have told the Davids, who she knows have this relationship with Christian?
It's a fascinating show. I love it. Like I said, we could talk about this stuff for hours. There are a couple of things that have come up post, or the one thing that I want to talk to you that come up post show before we get into some fun stuff like trivia.
Oh.
And I don't remember this happening in past seasons. It very well could have, though. In the last 2 weeks, Nick and Gabby both were able to do interviews with the Hollywood Reporter as they are still contestants on the show, which I thought was interesting. Did you see those interviews, and do you know why they were allowed to do those, and has it happened in the past?
So it hasn't just been Nick and Gabby this season. It's actually been a number of contestants this season who did these in-game interviews. Christian did one earlier in the season.
He did?
A bunch of them have done it, yeah. I think even Angelina did one. And I think, you know, Josh Wigler, who writes for The Hollywood Reporter covering Survivor, he often goes on location, and he's friends with a fantastic writer, great guy, and friends with a lot of these producers. So I think he pitched the idea of, what if we get some perspective from people who are still in the game? And I'm sure that he has to get approval on these things from CBS. I actually blogged about Survivor Cambodia while I was on Survivor Cambodia, and I was pretty amazed that Jeff Probst edited my blogs. You know, they were like, oh, we have to get Jeff's approval. And I was like, yeah, Jeff Probst is not editing my blogs. He's got more important things to do. But no, Jeff was editing my blogs. And I think that's a testament to how, you know, deeply concerned and embedded and passionate Jeff is about this show, is that he is taking the time to make sure that anything that gets released to the public is something that he has seen and he, you know, believes is representative of the brand. So he was editing my blogs. I think it's very possible that Jeff Probst is editing these articles that are in The Hollywood Reporter. I love it because I think, you know, like you said, there's so much that goes on. You know, they're filming for 3 days. You're seeing a 44-minute show. Of that, you know, 20 or 30 minutes is challenges and tribal council. So you see so little of the actual meat of what being on Survivor is about, which is that time on the beach. So to get these contestants' perspectives and see all of the thousands of calculations that go into every decision, I think gives such a much richer perspective of the show.
Yeah, and I'm sure those interviews are edited. I'm assuming those are probably run by Jeff first as well, because these are people that they don't want possibly leaking something, or, and it's not like they're going to say like, oh yeah, well, when I'm on the jury later on, you'll see me vote for who. They're not that dumb say that, but they could say something that you just never know. It could be a one sentence slip of whatever the case may be, but I'm guessing Jeff is looking at those before those are posted as well. If he did yours,
sure.
Then yeah, I'm sure.
That's he is. And you know, it's also someone who might be disputing something the show had to say about them. You're like, oh, you saw it this way, but that's not what really happened. And we don't need to hear that. You know, we don't need to hear you saying something that happened never happened. You know, so I think probably they edit for that as well, right? They're like, don't go contesting the things we've seen on television.
For sure. And I will link to the Nick interview and the Gabby interview from Hollywood Reporter. I'll link to it in today's post so people can check that out if you haven't seen it. It does give a little insight. The Nick interview was mostly about the John blind side and coming together and using two immunities to get John out, using the idol nullifier and their decision on how they came about. And then Gabby's was talking about, I already forget what she was talking about, but anyway, they're interesting though.
And I think what this interview showed too, is that like every time you think to yourself, these contestants are so stupid, why didn't they do so-and-so? Well, they thought about so-and-so. You know, like, they have thought through that thing that we all think they should have done, and there was a reason they didn't do it or they did it that way. You know, they you got nothing but time on Survivor to, you know, run scenarios. So yeah, pretty much everything that you can think about doing, like, they have thought about doing, and even if they got it wrong, they at least considered it.
Oh, for sure. And I think they, like you said, they definitely dive into so much more of what you don't see and the thought process that goes into why certain decisions were made. So it's really good stuff. I hope it continues, because I'll definitely be reading those in future seasons. So that's a good breakdown of David versus Goliath. I want to play a couple games with you again, because you know I love your knowledge of this show and I find it fascinating, and I love, especially the last time we did it and I was asking you questions, just to hear you rethink stuff in your head out loud about past seasons. I was amazed. Like, I'm just sitting there like, this guy is a Survivor savant. It's what you are. You know so much about this show. So,
what a tragedy. some of my life has come to this.
I've got some trivia questions. I got them offline off of some website. So these answers, I'm just taking the fact that these answers that were given to these trivia questions are right. I think they are. And some of these may be easy, some of these may be hard. Again, like, for me, I wouldn't have probably been able to guess any of these except maybe one. But because of your knowledge, I want to see if you know these. So here's question number one. And then I've got a riddle for you, which I'll get to in a second. Yeah, this is going to be fun to hear you think this one out. Okay. Question number one. This one sounds like it could be easy, but I have no idea. As we know, Survivor is 39 days of filming. Apparently, one season actually lasted 42 days. Do you know what season that was?
Yeah, it was season two, the Australian Outback.
Okay.
And I don't know if it was because, you know, that was, so they obviously had huge success with season one, you know, 39 days. I don't know if they thought, like, let's get in, you know, they're making so much money from advertising, let's try to get in another episode here. That's what I assume the calculation was.
Yeah.
I think the 39 days is great. And you know, you look at this show, Australian Survivor, which is that, you know, the version in Australia of Survivor, as you can. So not Survivor Australia.
Not the U.S. version. Yeah.
Yeah, not the Australian Outback. But in fact, the Australian version of Survivor lasts 55 days. And you can see by the end of that show, they are just done. These people are just gassed out. And I think 39 days is a great amount of time.
Yeah, 55. My God. I mean, just think, you lasted 39 days.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Can you
really
imagine throwing on another 2 weeks?
I cannot. And just that feeling you must feel of total hopelessness when you're out there of like, oh my God, I'm on day 7. It's felt like an eternity. I have 48 days left. I just can't imagine.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that a lot because of how long it is, you know, that sense where the biggest threats get taken out in American Survivor, you know, we typically see right before the end, all the big threats get taken out and maybe someone can make their way through that gauntlet and win the game. With 55 days, if you're a big threat and a big player, you just have no chance.
Yeah.
So we've seen in both, I actually have not seen the most recent season of Australian Survivor, but in the first two, you know, anyone who was remotely a big threat got eliminated, you know, around by day 45.
Okay. Yeah. So they've done two seasons and they're airing a third right now?
Done three, actually. And the second one, for any Survivor fans out there, if you can find this on the internet, on on YouTube or whatever, wherever you can find it, is one of the great Survivor seasons of all time. The second season of Australian Survivor. Really? Oh, it is an incredible season of the show with some of the best characters in the show's history. I don't want to spoil who they are, but there's one in particular who's just one of the great standout Survivor characters of all time. So I mean, it's a lot of TV because they air one of their episodes is like an hour and 15 minutes and they air like multiple a week. So it's just a tremendous amount of time. And that's actually some of the appeal of it is that you see a lot more of what the actual life is like and what the contestants are actually doing with their time. But a fantastic, fantastic season of Survivor for anyone who can track it down.
Okay. I might do that this summer or maybe yeah. Next summer. I'll check it out. Okay. Question number two. So we've had some sports figures that have been on in the past, Jeff Kent, John Rocker, Jimmy Johnson. You'll know the answer to this. Who lasted the longest between those three?
Rocker is the first out. He was at pre-merge.
Kent and Jimmy Johnson.
Oh, well, okay. Well, Jimmy Johnson, I think was, and Jimmy Johnson and Rocker were both out really soon on their season. I can't remember which of those two. So it was definitely Jeff Kent, who did really well in Survivor of the Philippines, made it deep into the merge. And I thought it was one of the great players. I would love to see Jeff Kent come back. He was really fun to watch.
Do you know what Rocker and Jimmy had in common?
Were they both third off?
They were both voted out on the eighth day. That's what the
okay. Wow.
So basically, same thing, I would think. Yeah, they were both voted out on the eighth day. Okay, so we all know that Rudy from season one was the oldest to play the game, 75 years old. Who was the second oldest to play the game?
Oh, God. I don't think I know that. The second oldest to play the game.
I didn't know this.
I would think Jimmy Johnson is up there. He was the oldest guy on the Survivor Nicaragua, which was the young versus old theme.
Yeah.
Is it a man or a woman?
Man.
I would say Jimmy Johnson.
No. It is Joseph Del Campo, Ko Rong.
Oh, I should have got that. Yeah, Joe Del Campo from Survivor 32, Ko Rong.
Yeah, 72 years old when he played. Yeah, I wouldn't have known that. I don't even remember Joseph Del Campo until I saw the picture. I'm like, oh, yeah, that guy. Like, when I just saw the name written in the answer, I was like, Joseph, no idea. Yeah. And then I saw the picture. I'm like, okay, yeah, him. So that's what I mean. Like.
Pulled from the game for, I think he was like severely constipated. Not how anyone wants to go.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right, next question. The only pre-merge tribe to face 8 consecutive tribal councils.
Oh, 8 consecutive. I was going to say Mot Singh, but they didn't have even 8 players. So, oh, this is Oolong and Survivor Palau.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, maybe every Survivor know-it-all knows this stuff and like the back of their hand, but to me, I'm fascinated by this.
Well, Oolong was like, I mean, there's a few tribes that just go down as like some of the greatest clusterfucks in the show's history.
Yeah.
And Oolong is one of them and it was such a fun season because you had this pick'em that started the season and, you know, you had these team captains and they, you know, each person picked the next person and the people on Karor, which was the other tribe that season, were all these like older people. They were like skinny. They were weird looking. And then Oolong, you had all these like young, beautiful, fit people. And so just seeing them totally fall apart. I mean, you know, granted on the other tribe, you had Tom Westman who ended up winning the game, who was one of, you know, the great Survivor contestants of all time. But it was just fun to see this like tribe of beefy people who probably thought that they were going to just march to victory kind of collapse. And it was sort of a David versus Goliath theme before they had David versus Goliath themes.
Was that the one with, I remember a season because they brought her back because she had such bad, was that the Stephanie De La Grossa thing where she was on Oolong and she was just on the shittiest tribe ever, so they brought her back the next season.
Yeah, okay. She was the last person from the shittiest tribe, and she was the one who made the merge. She did a fire making challenge against Bobby John, and who also was brought back.
Okay, now you're talking a different language. all right, next question. Now this question, I'm either going to sound really dumb or this was written wrong because I think the answer to this is wrong. But help me out here. And I cut and pasted it exactly how it was written. Besides Antarctica, the only continent to never play hosts to the U.S. version of Survivor.
Oh, it's North America. Oh, it's probably North America, right? Yeah, it's got to be North America.
Okay. That's what I thought. but it said...
Europe.
But then it said North America, South America, Africa, Asia, and Australia have all held it. I'm like, what
must
U.S.?
Must be like a Pacific island that would probably maybe counts as being part of North America.
Yeah, because I was like, wait a second. Either I'm dumb, I'm pretty good at remembering somewhat of the locations. I don't remember any season being anywhere near North America unless... I don't know.
It must be an island, or like, you know, I guess is Samoa is American Samoa. Where's that? I mean, here's my ignorance of geography coming in.
Yeah.
It's definitely some island that's considered part of this continent, but Europe is definitely, yeah, correct.
Yeah. Okay. And then this one I had to cut and paste because it got a little tricky in terms of, I guess, how it was worded. So maybe even the way it's worded, it'll be hard to describe, but here's how it was worded. Who is the only survivor to have attended and survived every single tribal council held on his or her season?
Oh, so that's Denise from Survivor Philippines. Correct. Which she was on Mot Singh, which was the other famous screw-up tribe. Another great run. Denise is a great, great character.
So wait, every tribal council we saw that season, Denise was part of it?
She was at every single tribal that season.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, when I looked up Survivor Philippines and I looked that up and I was like, Denise won? I was like, who? I watched that whole season and I had no idea Denise Stapley won that show. And even when I looked at the picture of the three of them sitting at the final tribal, it was her, Scoopin, and Lisa Welchel from Facts of Life. I was like, gosh, I remember Lisa Welchel being on the show and I remember Scoopin being on the show. Denise, and she won? I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, she was great. She was great. Wow. So she was on Mot Singh, which was this terrible tribe. They went to every tribal council. And then what happened was it was just the two of them. It was her and Malcolm. Malcolm was the other guy, was the other survivor from Mot Singh. And the two of them developed this really tight bond. And then they were split between the other tribes. So Malcolm went to... Oh my God, the yellow tribe. I don't remember what it was called. And then Denise went to the other one. And so at that point, that tribe started to lose. And then they merged. And so, of course, after the merge, everyone goes to every tribal council. So there you go.
Is that the season where at the final four, whatever the challenge was, basically if Malcolm, everybody thought Malcolm was going to win that season and he screwed up at the challenge or something? Or it was a...
Yep. He had it was like a balancing challenge.
Thing,
and Malcolm actually had an advantage where he could start over. So Malcolm lost the balancing challenge. You know, he played his advantage and then lost it again. And he said I think he had some like fine motor control issue in his hands for some reason that there was some problem that he was never going to win that challenge. But if he was one challenge away from winning.
Yeah, I remember. Okay, so I remember that. All right. Okay, so I have a riddle for you, and I did this on a podcast probably like 5 or 6 podcasts ago because it came up on a radio show that I listened to out here, and I thought it was interesting. And the second I heard this riddle, I was like, next time I have Stephen Fish back on, I'm asking him this because I want to hear his brain think this out logically and break it down. So it's something that let's just go with this, and I want to hear you think this out.
Oh, Panama! Sorry, I'm so sorry. Panama must be part of North America, right? So Survivor was in Panama.
I thought Panama was South America.
Anyway, sorry. I don't mean to.
Okay.
It's definitely Central America. I don't know if it counts as.
I don't know
if it's still technically North America or South America. Anyway.
Yeah. This has nothing to do with Survivor. This is just a straight riddle, but it's just you have to think. Okay, so here's the riddle. You are at a creek bed, a river. You have an endless supply of water at your availability. You have a 5-gallon bucket.
Oh, no. Oh, no. The gallons of buckets. Oh, I hate these. Oh, no.
You have a 5-gallon bucket and a 3-gallon bucket.
Yeah.
How do you get exactly 4 gallons of water? Now, you can't, without obviously eyeballing it and just filling it up and saying, so each bucket doesn't have, like the 5-gallon bucket doesn't have, here's 1 gallon, here's two, right. Here's three. You just have a 5 and a 3. How do you get exactly 4?
And there's no other, There's no other.
And it's no. This isn't even like a trick. Like, oh, I'm tricking.
There's no third bucket, right?
No.
You can only move water between the five and the three.
Exactly. Only move right, water so, between the five and the three, and you can't just eyeball it.
I've heard this riddle before, or I've heard similar riddles, right? There's like you've got a chicken and a wolf, and you need to get them across the stream together. It's right. So it has to do with like trying to free up. It's like you have to free up the one, right? It's you're trying to get it so that you only have like, so you said get exactly four.
Yeah, you have to get exactly four. There's two ways.
Right. So you have to get two. Okay. I think I have it. So you have to get two into the three and then you fill up the five. Somehow you have to get two gallons into the 3 gallon bucket and then you fill up the five and you pour the last gallon from the five into the three. So how do you get 2 gallons into the 3 gallon bucket? Well, you fill up the, okay, here's how you do it. You fill up the 5 gallon bucket. You empty it into the 3 gallon bucket.
Okay.
You pour out the 3 gallon bucket so that you have 2 gallons left
in
the 5 gallon bucket. Then you pour those 2 gallons into the 3 gallon bucket.
Correct.
So the 3 gallon bucket has 2 gallons in it. The 5 gallon bucket is empty. You fill up the 5 gallon bucket and you pour that last gallon into the 3 gallon bucket. So you have 4 gallons in the 5 gallon bucket.
Boom. You got it. Jesus.
All right. All right.
My God, you got that in 30 seconds. Huh.
I feel like I know that there's always, it's always like the leftover stuff, you know, that you have to figure out, you got to work with.
Well, that was like, that way that you did it was almost the subtraction way to do it. There's like an addition way to do it, and it's this way. It's you fill the 3 gallon bucket and you pour it into the five. So now you've got three in the 5 gallon bucket.
Yeah.
You fill up the three again and you pour the five to the brim.
Oh, so you have one and then you do
three. So you have 1 gallon left in the three. The five is filled up. You pour out that 5 gallon. Now you've got 1 gallon in the three. You put it into the five and then you fill up the 3 gallon bucket and you pour it into the five, which had 1 gallon in it, and that's your four.
Oh, that's good. I like that too.
So that's like the addition one. Like you went the subtraction way of,
yeah,
we'll do it, you know, empty it, fill it up again. You know how you did it. But yeah, fill up. You did fill up the five, pour it into three, empty it. Now you have two in the five. Pour those 2 gallons into the 3 gallon. Fill up the five again. Pour one off into the 3 gallon. Then you got 4 gallons. Okay. Wow. I mean, I figured you would get it. But when I heard this on the radio for the first time, these people literally took 5 to 10 minutes to talk through it. They eventually got it. Because this isn't like hard. I mean, this is addition of numbers of less than, you know, and subtraction of less than five. So it just takes time to think it out.
No, but just figuring out, like, honestly, the hardest part is figuring out the, like, even the way to approach the problem. Yeah. And I think that since I've seen similar questions before, I know just the general strategy. And so I was able to apply that general strategy to this specific example of it.
What was your first thought of when you said, I need to get to this point? What was it when you said it, when you initially thought it?
Oh, it was, I needed to get two and two, I guess, or just getting that 2 gallons.
Yeah.
And then.
Well, here's another math one. If you got that gallon one, you're going to get this one in 10 seconds, but this was another one that came up that I asked another podcast guest that everybody I've asked has not gotten this right on the first answer. So you get one answer.
Uh-oh.
But so you get one answer, but I still think you'll get this one. Anyway, so a bottle of water and a chocolate bar costs $11 total.
Can I take notes?
Oh, sure. You write it down.
Okay, I'm taking notes.
So, water and chocolate bar, $11 total.
Yeah.
The chocolate bar is $10 more than the bottle of water.
Okay.
How much is the bottle of water?
50 cents.
Oh, Jesus. You know, everybody immediately says $1.
A dollar, right? Yeah. And then you've got, $12 worth of,
God.
That's a good chocolate bar, though.
Now, did you, like, I figured you would get it, but you got it so quickly. Do you think it was because you had it written in front of you? Like, if I didn't allow you to write it, would it have taken
I don't know. That's a good question.
10 seconds longer to get it?
It is possible. I definitely, I mean, I'm also, like, I process things more through, like, written words than than oral words. So like I'm able to think better when I see the words in front of me.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe that helped. Whatever. Yeah,
it probably did help. Yeah.
Whatever the case may be. I'm way more impressed that you got the gallon thing as quickly as you did, because most people, when they are thinking out loud of the gallon thing, they start saying, okay, pour this into this. Oh, wait, you can't do that. Like, you didn't make any mistakes. Like, you went and knew exactly what you were doing. That's what
I've struggled through with that. With simple, like I said, I've struggled with similar. You do, like, your initial instinct is to, like, brute force it in a way of, like, okay, I've got three, you know, then what do we got? Another three? Like, how do I eyeball one and the three? Like, there's just no way.
Well, I'm impressed, and great. Survivor talk again, Steven. You are a know-it-all. I love.
Like I said, I don't know. It's a sad state. It's a sad state of affairs.
I love hearing you break down this season. I think we're in for a good ending. Hopefully, it's Christian. I think that's what probably a lot of people want to see. I mean, if somebody else won, it's like, okay, great for them. But I think for the storyline and the theme that they have for this season, I think a satisfying ending for that show and its majority of its fans is probably seeing Christian end up with the title this season.
I mean, he's one of, and you know, apparently I'm not allowed to say, I'm not to speak too universally, but I do think Christian is a contestant. We haven't seen a contestant in years with the same kind of universal fan support where everyone is rooting for him. Now, I've seen some people say Suri, you know, there was Joey Amazing in my season. But I really think that the support for Christian crosses lines, you know, in terms of, like, you know, I think Joey had his demographic supporters, you know, probably everyone loves Suri, but I'm not sure if everyone loves Suri with the intense passion. Maybe on Suri's first season, people loved her with this passion, but people love Christian and in a way that crosses casual fans and super fans and every type of fan, it seems. And of course, there's going to be people out there who aren't as gaga over him as others. And some people find him annoying and some people are sick of his analogies. But so I don't mean everyone loves Christian. I just mean his level of support is broader and more enthusiastic, I think, than any contestant we've seen in a really, really long time.
Yeah, we've just never seen anybody like him. The way he speaks, the way he verbalizes things, the way he analyzes it, we've just never seen anything like it. It's just,
yeah.
And you would think 37 seasons and 20 people a season, you'd think maybe at some point we would have seen somebody as analytical as him on the show and be able to verbalize that analysizing of basic things that he does on this show. It's great to watch. He's great TV. Hopefully when this is all over and maybe a couple months after, I can get him on the podcast, because he's someone I would love chatting with. And
so, oh yeah,
I should have almost started a stopwatch with you on the riddle to see how quickly to see if he beat your time.
Well, I don't even think I'm in the. I mean, you know, that's a different league. Yeah, this is his. He's a professional robotics engineer. I hope he can figure out water and buckets. You know, he's next level for that.
Well, you got it in 20 seconds. Like, he'd have to do it in 15. Like,
I'm sure he would be able to.
Yeah, that's true.
And he would probably tell you a whole methodology for doing it that, you know, well, of course, this is the, you know, Eisenblatt principle of, you know, I'm sure he's a real smart cookie, and he's a really, really nice guy. I've interacted with him a little bit. You know, I try to avoid talking to the contestants too much during the season because I don't want to get spoiled. But he seems like a really, really sweet guy. And as we've all seen on screen, as you know, the other thing about Christian is that as smart as he is, as brainy as he is, he also is really emotionally intelligent. You know, he's everyone's security blanket. You know, he's the guy who's comforting people, who's hugging people, who they're turning to when they're low. So it's not like he's just some, you know, rope, like brain in a jar. He's a really thoughtful human being.
Well, how old is he?
I think he's 30 or 31.
Oh, Jesus. I thought he was like 23.
No. He's a PhD, you know. He's that's like a right. Professor.
I guess I'm going off looks, because I didn't look at the bio and in terms of their ages that it says on the bio.
Yeah.
I was just going strictly off look. He looks like he could pass for 21 years old.
He's very youthful looking for sure. Yeah.
And then where's he based out of?
I don't know. I think he's in Florida.
Florida?
Somewhere. Yeah, I could be getting that wrong. I think he's in Florida.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I had, God, 31. Gosh. He just looks, I guess it, you know, and this sounds horrible, but it's basically, I'm going off physical appearance. He looks, you know, because he's about probably 110 pounds soaking wet, and
yeah,
he looks like he could be a teenager. I mean,
yeah.
Just, you know.
No, he definitely looks a lot young. I mean, he looks very young. And,
yeah.
You know, there's something like almost ageless about his persona, you know, because it is so, and we were talking a little bit before we started recording about just how, you know, right out of the gate, people said, called him Big Bang Theory, and how he is that character. He does seem like he's kind of from the Big Bang Theory. And that was for, you know, for years, CBS's most popular show was Big Bang Theory. So people love that sort of nerd character. And I think, you know, you look at some of those people, you don't think of them as being, you know, there's something young about that whole personality. I don't know.
And one last thing on Christian, I don't know if you know this or not. Is he like total super fan? Like, guy's been watching the show for years, or do you?
He's definitely been watching the show for years. Whether he has watched every season, I don't know. You know, he's applied a couple of times to be on the show.
Okay.
So he's definitely been a lot. You know, he of course listens to all the podcasts about it. So he's definitely a big fan of the show.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Steven, thanks again for coming on. Glad we did this on Thursday morning after the episode, because it really would have been weird to not.
Yeah.
Discuss what happened with Gabby last night and everything like that. So, again, thank you so much for coming on. Enjoy the rest of the season, and I'm sure we'll have you on again in the future.
One thing I want to promote to all of your listeners.
Yeah,
I'm actually starting another podcast that has nothing to do with Survivor, nothing to do with reality television.
Oh.
I'm interviewing novelists about the start of their novels and the start of their careers and the craft that goes into writing a great opening to a novel. So I'm hoping to launch that in the next week or two. I've just submitted it to iTunes for approval, and I'm really, really excited about that. So follow me on Twitter at Steven Fishback, and I will, if that sounds remotely appealing to you, I will, you know, keep you updated about that there.
Could you tell us who your first podcast guest is and who the author is?
Yeah, the author is Jeff Vandermeer, who wrote the book Annihilation. I'm a huge fan of his. Annihilation was recently turned into a movie directed by Alex Garland. And he's a really smart guy. He's been, you know, writing since he was in high school, published numerous bestsellers, and has even written about, you know, he's written a book about craft, about writing a novel. So he's got fantastic insight into how to start writing and how to, you know, sort of trust your subconscious and create something really strange and powerful.
Very interesting. Okay. Yeah. No, we'll definitely keep an eye out for that. I'll attach your Twitter account to, in the post today. And, do you have a title for that podcast, or is it just?
I haven't released the title yet. I just don't want anyone swooping in. I want it to be fully signed, sealed, and delivered. I don't want anyone squatting on my domain or anything. So
no problem.
Yeah, but I will. Hopefully, it'll be up in a week or two.
Okay. Yeah, we'll keep an eye out for that. So thanks again, Steven. Really appreciate it. And
well, thank you
we'll
so
have
much,
you on in
Steve.
The future.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
You got it. See you.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks again to Steven for that. One of my favorite guests. I swear I could. Listen to that guy talk Survivor and history and team colors from fucking 17 seasons ago. How does he know this stuff? I mean, I guess you could, you know, it's kind of like, I don't want to say it's kind of like me, but some people email me and tell me they're amazed by the stuff that I remember when it comes to Bachelor. But again, it's my job. And it's stuff that I'm constantly have notes on and I'm writing about. So it just almost automatically gets ingrained in my head, certain things of, you know, I could easily name the final four of every season of The Bachelor from probably Brad Womack's first season on. But if you told me to name the final four of last season of Survivor, even though I watched every episode of it, I couldn't tell you. Not a clue. So, yeah, it's just... You know, he does this for a living, but he's also a Yale graduate. I didn't graduate from Yale, so guy's pretty smart, incredibly smart. And to hear him talk about this stuff and to rehash it and think it out, like, I knew he was going to get the riddle right. I didn't know he was going to get it right in fucking 30 seconds. That's crazy. Like, usually when they start thinking it out verbally, you start saying, okay, I got to fill up these three buckets. Oh, wait, no, I can't do that because... This already has 1 gallon in it. No, he got everything right from the second he started thinking it out. And I was just amazed by that. Hope you were too. Anyway, thanks to Steven again for coming on. Thank you all for listening. Please rate, subscribe, and review in Apple Podcasts. It is much appreciated. Also, if you want to be part of the He Said, She Said podcast with myself and Ashley Spivey, episode 11 just dropped this past Tuesday. Check it out. Our first caller, we actually got an update from that we give you in the same podcast. So check that out with Megan in Massachusetts. Then also Tina in Tennessee, who was the pretty much the basis of our poll question this week about dealing with in-laws. And we've got a lot of good responses. I had a lot of personal emails sent to me that I forwarded on to Tina that were very much appreciated. Some of these people need your help, and they just want to respond on Twitter, or if you want to email me and I could put you in touch with that person, by all means, let me know. So check that out. If you want to be on a future podcast with myself and Ashley, or Ashley and me, I changed that to Ashley and me because I got an email the other day. Let me pull this up. Someone said, I followed you for a very long time. I've never written, just checking out your site. When you say contact myself or Ashley, it should be contact Ashley or me. It's like fingernails on a chalkboard every time I hear you say myself or Ashley. Again, I'm not the most eloquent linguist in the world, but thank you for telling me that. I will try and remember in the future. I can't guarantee it because I guess I've been so used to saying contact myself or Ashley that it's probably going to slip out in the future. But for this podcast, at least I remembered your email. It should be contact Ashley or me. So please contact Ashley or me if you want to be on it. Tell us what time zone you're in. Tell us the best available times you can record, and we'll work out a time and get you on the show. So thanks again to Steven Fishback for coming on. We'll definitely have him on in the future to talk more Survivor when the next season rolls around or whatever the case may be. But thank you all again for tuning in. You realize today is December 6th. Today is the actually 2 years. Well, not to the actual date, but the first week of December 2016 was my very first podcast. The first Thursday in December of 2016 was my first podcast. And here we are, first Thursday in December. We're on podcast number 107. Jesus, that's crazy. And you might be asking yourself, wait a second, why is there 107 when there's 52 weeks in the year and you've done one once a week? Well, in the beginning, I don't know if you remember, when I started in December of 2016, there were a couple weeks where I actually did two podcasts in the same week. I think there were 3 weeks where I did two. So, yeah. So that's why we're at 107 instead of 104. Anyway, thank you all for tuning in. Really appreciate it. And we will talk to you next week. See ya.